Hello, welcome back to the You're Wondering Now podcast. Now, you're probably wondering now, where have we been these past few months? Well, at least one of you might have been wondering. Darrell has been busy with something he calls life, and since I don't have one, you're going to be stuck with just me today. So I do sincerely apologise if you can't stand me, because that would make two of us, but you've got me for however long I decide to talk or until I start to cry tears of despair at how stagnated I now find myself. I've got no idea how this is going to go. It could be absolutely terrible, it could be slightly less than absolutely terrible, or even worse. You know, I'm going to level with you, it's just me, a microphone, and audacity. And for those of you that don't already know, I know absolutely nothing about technology. It's all producer Joe. So if he can polish a turd, Godspeed. It's worth pointing out that Darrell probably will be back at some point. Because Lord knows you can't listen to these drones forever. So what am I going to talk about? You are wondering now. Last Sunday, and for those of you who can time travel or listen in the future, I'm talking about Sunday the 9th of June 2024, I was fortunate enough to grab a ticket to watch the final show of Gary Numan's tour commemorating the 45th year anniversary of his seminal album, A Pleasure Principle, and Replicas, which is both a Tubeway Army album and a Gary Numan album, respectively. I'd never been to the Roundhouse before. This was the last of three nights in a row, I think. I could be wrong. At this venue, you know, it does what it says on the tin. It's a house that is round. So I think today I'm gonna talk about Gary Numan, I think, who is the godfather.
The godfather
of synth pop, really. He kind of introduced mainstream synth to music. That doesn't make sense as a sentence, but, you know, fuck it, we're gonna go with it. You knew what I meant. He knows what I meant. He won't be listening. So before I get into the gig, let's talk about Gary Numan. He is Hammersmith born. As he speaks like that! I think he's about, 66? So, you know, fair play to him for putting on a show. 66. He's had a bloody, bloody long, successful career. Just to list you off a few facts that definitely aren't lifted straight from Wikipedia. Gary Numan, as of 2024, has 22... studio albums to his name, 29 live albums, 17 compilation albums, 13 EPs, which for you fucking idiots out there means extended player, and 51 singles, which is really not bad at all in my book. So, you know, where should we start? Let's go to 1979. So within a 6-month period, Gary Numan, who was formerly of the Tubeway Army, released Replicas, and then his debut solo album, The Pleasure Principle, was released just 6 months later. And I don't know if you've ever listened to these two bodies of works, but I think that is testament to just how creative and how successful Gary Numan really, really is. You know, I'm a flash forward 45 years or so. 45. He's as popular as ever. And something I love about Gary Numan is that he doesn't want to stagnate. Unlike me, he's not stuck in the past. He doesn't hate himself. He just wants to carry on moving forward. He even said he doesn't actually... I don't like playing the old stuff. That was Gary Numan. He's not French. So, yeah, and And for me, obviously, I'm not 45 years old. I'm 22 years old. I'm less than half the age of two albums that he's made. And it was a really great experience. You know, it took me a while to get into the set to be convinced truly. But when it hit, it did really hit. Just something for producer Joe to note. Maybe you could cut in, because I've missed a bit of my monologue. There you go. I mean, you know you've hit rock bottom when you start a podcast. Never mind when you end up doing a said podcast by yourself. Think of this as a professional breakdown. At least I can't talk over anybody this week, but I will try. So he played 22 songs across about an hour and a half, which is the standard these days. And again, it's commemorating an album / two albums that have helped make him, really. And joining him on stage was Steve Harris on guitar. Let me tell you, that man is, I mean, in the nicest way possible, an absolute psychopath. He interchanged between guitar and bass. Then he had David Brooks on keyboard and had bassist Tim Slade. And I'm going to be real, I forgot the name of the drummer because he did not care to introduce his band, nor did he actually speak in between songs. He just rattled through. Something that I find ultra impressive about this music is it's not all just garage bandy, kind of synthy, blah, blah. It's real instruments. And we're all familiar with his most successful single of all time, number one in the charts, which is Our Friends Electric. And if you're not acquainted with that song, I think you should do your very best to go and have a listen now. That's Gary Numan and the Tubeway Army, released on Replicas. And this song for me really puts me in a dystopian, sci-fi, almost Star Trek-y world. And that might be resonant purely because if you listen to what Gary has to say about that song, it's about robotic prostitutes. Gary is a self-proclaimed big fan of sci-fi, and he got really into writing sci-fi fiction as a youth. And this song is purely about getting with robotic prostitutes. But I think the song transgresses so much more than just robotic prostitution. It's an absolutely iconic synth riff. I think everybody knows it. And if you don't know it from Gary Numan, you might be familiar with the 2002 Sugar Babes single Freak Like Me. And that song actually helped bring Gary Numan back into the limelight. He'd kind of gone a bit quiet for a couple of decades. The Sugar Babes sampled the synth riff to Our Friends Electric, and it kind of opened up the world as, oh shit, look what we've missed out on, look what we've slept on. And Gary, bless him, the humble man he is, says that Sugar Babes song is so much better than Our Friends Electric. Maybe that's the opinion of his accountant. I don't know, but I think I prefer Our Friends Electric. Furthermore, I'm just going to speak shite for a few minutes while I think about what I want to say next. I was talking about Our Friends Electric. Well, see, this is... We're fucked already, to be honest. I was talking about Our Friends Electric. Yeah, great single. Other singles that you probably know, his most famous one is Cars. And yeah, I think I think it would be fair to say that people know Gary Numan for Cars and Our Friends Electric, but in my opinion, he's one of the most slept upon musicians. He's so talented, and I tell you what, seeing him live really, really helps you to appreciate just how good and how much of a creative visionary this man is. And it's so great that he's still willing to share this music with us. He's a fantastically complex human, and that is reflected in the sounds he makes. You really feel like you're on the set of Blade Runner, or you're in a different world. And for me, any music that can transport you to a place like that is quite powerful, and it should not be disregarded, that talent, because not everyone can do it, but everybody thinks they can. You know, something more about Gary. One of my favorite Gary Numan songs, which is on the Pleasure Principle, is Airlane, which is it's a 4 or 5 minute instrumental with, you know, scintillating hi-hat work, a really, really, really kind of punchy synth groove that tickles your chest. I know that's a funny say. It tickles your chest. Let's go with that. It tickles your chest. And that, you know, it's kind of inspired as well. Another kind of ebb to who Gary knew. He's a pilot. Of course he is. So in between flying planes, he makes music that transgresses generations. Hence, well, Airlane. So on to the gig itself. I was very... Sorry, that's Ticketmaster text messaging me. I've got another gig this evening. That might be volume 2 if this goes well. What am I seeing tonight? So the beauty of Ticketmaster in this modern age is when they're not trying to fuck you over, there are tickets available. And I'd never been to the Roundhouse. I had nothing to do on this Sunday. So I thought, you know what? I'll go to the Roundhouse. And like I said before, for those of you that are unfamiliar with the Roundhouse, it is in Chalk Farm, which is on the Northern Line for you people in London. And for you people outside of London, good luck. Edgware, High Barnet, good luck. So you get there, it's a house, it's round. It feels more like you're entering a museum or like an exhibition than a venue, which is quite nice and unique, actually. It's not big. It's, I'm going to guess, maybe 800 seated, 1,800 standing. Or is that, let's see what Google says. Capacity, seated dinner. Oh, seated dinner. I didn't have dinner. Standing reception, 1,800. So that's a very, that's not too far off O2 Academy in Brixton, which has just reopened. Thank Lord that has just reopened. And it was full. You get there and it's full. That's always a good sign. I know I managed to grab a ticket on the off chance, but it was through resale, so that doesn't count. It was full. And I was by myself. That's another thing. I think going to gigs by yourself should never, never, ever be scoffed at. Excuse me. Fuck, sorry. I've just come off from a long day of pretending to work. So I get there, it's all easy, I get in. And something unique about this venue is there's an outdoor area where you can sit and have a drink. And I thought, I'll buy a flat pint of Diet Coke for £3.50 and some tap water. So I sat outside by myself. So I sat on a plant pot, actually. I got soil over my arse. I was sat there just debating life, looking at the Tesco across the road, analysing all the interesting people at this gig. You really did get a real wicked mix of old people at this gig, people that want to relive the 70s and 80s. And there's always that one couple that insist on talking to someone that's alone at a gig. I think there's some stigma around being at a gig alone. Oh, he's depressed. Oh, someone's died. No, I'm just at a gig and I'm here to enjoy myself. And they come and sit down. He goes, he says, "Where are you from?" And this guy looks like a really happy poodle, but he looks like a poodle that's about to be entered into Crufts. So he looked polished and excited, but not like that. And he's like, "Oh, are you here to see Gary Newman?" I'm like, "What do you think, mate?" And he's like, "Oh, well, so are we. How come you? Oh, you look, you know, the formalities. You look young. Why are you here?" I'm like, "Well, I want to be." And then he, maybe I'm attacking this from a point of view that's a bit unfair, because I do work in the music industry, if I haven't told you all already. He says, "Gary Newman, you know, Gary Newman is an ace, fantastic. We saw him in UAE. I'm like, "Oh yeah, East Anglia. "Yep, the University of East Anglia." I'm like, "Oh, that's great. How come you saw him there?" "Well, we live there, don't we?" I'm like, "Well, I don't know, you didn't tell me." "Well, we live there. And I tell you what, he was absolutely rocking, like proper hardcore rock." I was thinking, so I wouldn't describe Gary Newman as hardcore rock, because he's not, he's synth. And this guy, I didn't challenge him, because I thought, fair enough, he's having a nice time, why not? Then he gets his missus involved. "Yeah, you tell him how good he was." And she went, "Oh, he was really lovely. Dennis loved him. He were great." And then this guy who's swooshing his luscious grey matted locks in the wind, he says, "Oh, we overdid it the first time. Ask me why we're back here. I'm like, "Oh, why are you back here?" "Oh, we overdid it the first time." So, I know you've just said. Is there something about old people wanting to like mansplain or just ego dump on young people at gigs? And then, again, I could have said I didn't want to. And then he goes all technical on me. "We mocked up. We stood behind the guy mixing the sound. So yeah. I said, "But why is that an issue?" And he goes, "Oh, you just don't hear the sound properly." I said, "The same happened at Paul Weller." I said, "That probably happened at Paul Weller because Paul Weller's shit." He said, "What do you mean, Paul Weller? I grew up on Paul Weller." Fair enough. I was not going to argue with him. He was about 3 foot taller than me. And he hurries his wife away to get into the roundhouse so he can get a decent spot in front of the sound mixer. I think maybe in his head he thought front of house would be in the middle of this circle, of this round house, this spherical house, but he wasn't. The front of house was actually at the back of the house, which is funny. And fair play, he was rocking all night, and I missed the support. I did feel a little bit guilty about that, but I wasn't in the mood, quite frankly. So Gary comes on stage about 8. Fantastic production, great little stage. It had the Pink Floyd kind of triangle going on, but it was all in neon. It was all dark and mysterious, very on brand for Gary. And he comes on stage, that they attack into I think they play 4 songs and took a little break. It's worth noting, he did not speak once to the audience. 22 songs, he spoke once at the end before the encore. And I'm going to be honest, I was not immediately impressed, which those of you who know me know that's nothing out of the ordinary. I'm not usually impressed at anything, but yeah, there was nothing wrong with it. It just wasn't electrifying enough for me. There was something missing. It was a little bit airy-fairy, but kudos. They played all the music on all the, they could have easily have just done everything by press and play on a track, but no. And I think that's part of why I really respect what they do. They include all types of instruments. They've got the synth, they've got keyboard, they've got a real live acoustic drum kit, not an electric kit. Gary sings, and he's got real bass guitars and electric guitars. The mix was fantastic musically. Vocally, not so good, unfortunately. But again, I don't know if that's just last night of the tour kind of thing, or just Gary, he wasn't feeling it that night, or that's just how he sets it up. But Or it could have been the venue, could have just been the acoustics of the room, but yeah, the vocals were not fantastically mixed, and that was quite prevalent throughout his whole set. And I'm at that age and stage now where I'm not interested about moshing. Not that people are moshing at a Gary Numan gig. That would be old people having seizures, any moshing. I was stood at the back. And there's always people at these gigs. I had it at Primal Scream. I had it at the Stones. All these people trying that have never moved on. Gary Numan, his whole ethos is about moving on. So this guy is dancing. He's in front of me, random bloke. He's like moshing away, and I'm stood there like a fucking pyramid. I don't move. I'm not. I don't raise a smile. I clap after every song. And he comes up to me and he keeps rattling me. He's like, "Why aren't you dancing? Why are you dancing? Why are you dancing?" And it took everything within me not to throttle this bastard. But then I took a step back and I was like, oh, is he being a bastard? Yes, yes he is. Eventually he fucked off because everyone got fed up of him, which thankfully made it easier for me to watch the rest of the set. And when artists don't speak in between their songs, the gig goes quicker, obviously, because there's no preamble, there's no arty-farty audience interaction. He was very appreciative, though. And he's humble. Certain songs like The Match Man, You Are In My Vision, which he invited his daughter Raven on to do, and Metal. His heavier stuff really packed a punch. When those guitars and that bass was really thumping, that was when my eyes opened. I thought, wow, that is why I like Gary Numan. This is good. But moving on, maybe put a little ad break in here for all the people that are still listening. If you're still listening, I don't know what your experiences of anniversary shows are. I know some artists now like to mix it up. My idea of an anniversary show is you play the album or the record from start to finish in a sequential order. Because the whole point is, it's this album, you're in the world of that album for however long you are in that venue. You want to be immersed in that album. You want to leave feeling that a piece of you is now with this album. A piece of this album is now with you. And it was rather confusing to not hear everything in order. And sorry, I'm getting a phone call. Shit. Decline. Sorry, Mum. Keep that in. It was confusing, really, because I obviously listened. I did my homework. I was diligent. First time I've done homework in a long time. I listened to the albums in order. I listened to Replicas and I listened to Pleasure Principle. Replicas has a bit more of an indie rock edge to it. It was less, even though there was a synth emphasis on it, it was not as prevalent as Replicas, because I remember an interview Newman said how he first walked into the studio and found a synth and started playing it. He went, "Eep. Eep, eep." And he was enamored. And from then on, he was obsessed with making these sounds out of these synth kind of keyboards, completely curtailed the direction of everything he wanted to go in, and he made these records. And I think he said the record label were absolutely furious with what he'd done, because they paid for the sessions, which, for those of you who don't know, are really not cheap at all. They pay for these sessions and he comes out with this. Little did they know they had gems like Our Friends Electric on it, Metal, Cars, Airlane. So yeah, I think it was a little bit off-putting. That's my one gripe with the set. I think if you're marketing a show to be one thing, you've got to at least make it kind of sequential and flow, because I couldn't place myself in this gig. Yes, it's nice to not know what's going to happen next and that bit of surprise, but you don't need, like, Roger Daltrey was complaining in the news today that he's sick of people looking up his set list before the show because it kills the magic and the surprise. A, there's no surprise there, Roger, because you've played the same set list for 35 years. But B, if you're going to an anniversary show, there can't be any surprise because you know exactly what's going to get played. You know, that's like going to, I am actually going to a Green Day show and then playing American Idiot and Green Day and mashing it, American Idiot and Dookie and mashing it all together. They're not going to do that. I struggle to get my head around that. If you're going to do an anniversary tour, there's no surprises, you know exactly what you want. You've got to play it the way that you play it. It has to be start to finish. You can mess around with the album a little bit, but you've got to stay true to what it is. I was very, very happy that they played Airlane. Like I mentioned before, that's my favourite song. And I thought they brought a new life to Airlane, actually, because a lot of instrumentals can get stagnant. If you're playing that live, you really rely on the playing to make an instrumental fantastic. And they did just that. And I had looked at the set list beforehand, and they hadn't played Airlane in the first two shows. So I had a little bit of inkling that they'd play. And I recommend that you all go and have a listen to that, because that is a fantastic little sci-fi record. Bless Gary. He's what, about 3'7"? Little rocker. He gets his daughter out to play You Are In My Vision. That is a very, you listen to that, that's not a sophisticated song at all. It's a song that Roger Taylor from Queen could have written and no one would have known any different. But I like it because I like plain shite because I'm boring. But that hit, I think that'd be fair. The songs that are less reliant on synth really pumped a bit of oomph into the room. And then obviously the encore, which, you know, you go a whole set without doing Cars or Our Friends Electric, you're wondering what's going to come next. Oh, the encore, Cars, Our Friends Electric, which I didn't, a lot of people left. And unless you're the hardcore Newman fans, why are you leaving before his two favourite songs? His favourite songs and, well, the world's favourite songs. And they come back on stage, they play that little preamble, that kind of fuzzy, wobbly preamble to Cars, and then the drummer cuts in with that really snappy kind of snare, and immediately the lights come on, bang, it feels like you've just been smacked by something, and Gary's performing with more electricity than he said the whole set. It's like he's just come out, and out the corner of my eye, actually in the VIP area, I spot a certain Dave Grohl, who is rocking. And last night I saw Josh Fries, who also drums in the Foo Fighters, but that's another story. That's messing with the timeline of gigs here. So Cars gets played, everybody sings along. It feels like a community, it feels like church. That's church to me. A gig is church. When everyone's singing along and we're all caught up in that moment, and then lights go off. There's another encore. Gary says his piece, he goes, I hate playing old stuff usually, I like to move forward. And I think that's testament to his record of what he's put out, his work ethic. He said he's going to start work on another album right after this. This was a recorded tour as well, so expect another live album for all you Newman maniacs. And then obviously he launches into Our Friends Electric, which he'd actually mucked up a couple of times on this tour. So it was nice to know that he'd finally learnt the words to a song that he wrote 45 years ago. And it was fantastic. I turned up to that gig, stony-faced, a little bit miserable. And I left, I wouldn't say a smile. I think that's a little bit severe. I wouldn't say I left with a smile on my face. I left happy that I'd gone, because I very easily could not have gone, and I'd have been completely by myself at home doing nothing, listening to anything but Gary Numan. And now I can say I've seen Gary Numan. You know, I left thinking, wow, wouldn't it be great to do that? And it's kept me in the music industry for at least another week. Because nothing else is at the moment. So I'm stockpiling the gigs. And the only thing that ruined this gig was, not only did I step in a milkshake on the way home, I also stepped in dog shit. The two are mutually exclusive. But got in the grooves. Let's not go there. So yeah, and you know, I was not completely deaf. That's something powerful about that. Someone that can raise the hairs on your chest without making you deaf. That's powerful. I think a lot of people now, they just go to blind him with the sound. If you blind him with the sound, he'll be impressed. And you know what? That might be the case for blockheads like me. But appreciating good, true music where you're not going to bed feeling like your head's about to explode, your ears are ringing like a doorbell. There's something powerful about that. And I really would urge everybody to give Replicas a listen from start to finish and then move on to Pleasure Principle. But that Replicas album, Tubeway Army, cool name for a band, by the way, is absolutely great. That's the most, well, it's a very varied album. And considering it pioneers a certain sound of a generation, it's also a historical album. And you cannot, for one minute, deny that. Whatever you think of him, whatever you feel, he's absolutely class. And he's a real deal, Gary. He's a really nice guy. Lot of time for his fans, and he interacts with them on social media. It'd be great. And something as well, you know, he's very open with his mental struggles. You know, he's got asparagus. Oh no, which is the one that makes your wee smell funny, and which is the one that makes you he's got Asperger's, and he's very open about that. And I think that's something we should all be a bit more mindful of. We should definitely not be afraid to be open with our struggles. But please, I cannot stress this enough. Please don't come to me with your struggles. I do not want to hear a single thing wrong with you. If you've got issues, good luck. I hope you can find the person to talk to, but make sure that isn't me, please. So yeah, any messages from today from me should be, I'm sorry that it's just been, if this has been boring, please tell me, because God knows I'm bored. I'm just sat here in a room absolutely by myself talking about Gary Numan. Nothing against Gary, but if you get a chance, see him live. He's not been performing for a while, but you know, his band, nice people get other nice people to play. And even though his Steve Harris is a weird, I kept looking at him playing live and I thought, is he signaling to a roadie to turn something up or down? Like, why is he pointing? Why is he putting his fingers down his throat? And it dawned on me that he's just absolutely off his rocker mad. He's crazy. It was quite funny. It's left a lasting impression. I will never, ever forget locking eyes with a man with a straight line drawn down the middle of his face, bald as an egg, you know, dressed in, just like something from, it was just like Darth Vader without the mask, basically. He's wicked on the guitar. I think his guitar costs, what, 70 quid? Playing a big $1 million production, well, probably, tour. And he's playing a £70 guitar and he looks absolutely crackers. And as soon as he's off stage, bam, different guy. That's a real performer. And, you know, to the 8 people that liked my Instagram story, thank you. I think you know what good music is. So, yeah, that was Welcome Back to the You're Wondering Now podcast. And You're Wondering Now, will this happen again? I sincerely hope so. Maybe not in this format. Please let me know. I've got another gig to go to, so that could be another story time for next week. So now this is in the hands of producer Joe. But from now on, thank you for listening. I really, really, really do appreciate the people that do. Lots and lots of love. Peace out. How do you turn this shit thing off? Keep that in.